Hello, this is John Ivey from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the January 2011 issue of Boy's Life. Our first article is entitled Go Fish, pages 18 through 21. And here has a big picture here of couple of boys in a canoe. It looks like they've caught something. Let's begin. The massive network of rivers and lakes near the BSA's Don Rogert canoe base in Canada is full of challenges for paddlers. There's a current that always seems to be moving against you. There's a breeze that always seems to be blowing against you. And there are the mosquitoes. Don't get us started on the mosquitoes. For the scouts of Troop 222, Westtown, Pennsylvania, all of the challenges they faced on their trip to Attakokand, Ontario, were worth it, because Troop 222 was there for the fishing. Operated by the Northern Tier National High Adventure Bases, the Canadian Fishing Expedition takes Boy Scouts and ventures into those rivers and lakes for 5 or 6 days of canoeing, camping, and fishing. The fishing was definitely my favorite part, says 13-year-old Star Scout John Falcon, because you didn't have to paddle. Master anglers. Participants in the Canadian fishing expedition stop first at the Don Rogert base in Attakokand for a day of shakedowns and, if necessary, fishing lessons. But in the case of Troop 222, no lessons were needed. These guys know their way around a tackle box. I go fishing a lot, but around Pennsylvania, the fish really aren't as big and they don't fight as much, John says. Up there, it's way more exciting. Early on day two, the high adventure began with a float plane ride to the starting point, in this case, the middle of the Sawbill Lake. The ride took about 20 minutes and provided great views of the area in which they would be fishing and spend the next 5 days. We saw mountains, cliffs, huge lakes, and everything, says John's brother Matt, a 16-year-old life scout. It's not all like Pennsylvania. The plane landed right in the middle of the lake, and the scouts went straight into their canoes and started paddling. Minutes later, they pulled out their gear and started fishing. And after a few minutes after that, they started catching. Fish everywhere. These scouts were well prepared for this trip. Each had already earned his fishing merit badge. But nothing could prepare the guide for the quality and quantity of fishing in these waters. Over the next 6 days, the group would paddle 55 miles. That's a nice and leisurely pace, which was all part of the plan. These guys were here to fish. We caught so many fish, Matt says. We could pass by a good spot and then we'd start fishing. Wally bass, northern pike, lake trout, yellow perch, and sunfish are all common in the waters covered by Northern Tier. On this trip, the scouts hauled in mostly bass and northern pike. On each day, they caught plenty of fish to make a fine dinner. After that, they practiced catch and release, and the fish just kept coming. There were a lot of big fish, Matt says. It was a real good time. Against the wind. In between fishing stops, there was the small chore of paddling those 55 miles. Evan Gross, a 16-year-old life scout, was the most experienced canoeist in the group. He's been a member of a canoeing program through his school for the last 4 years, but those trips are mostly on fast-moving rivers. There's a lot more headwind, Evan says. Somehow we always ended up facing the headwind. To maintain their stamina, the scouts took plenty of breaks. And what better way to spend the downtime than with some fishing? As soon as we'd stop paddling, we'd go backwards, says 14-year-old life scout David Dunn. We kept hoping the next day the wind would be with us, but it never happened. The bugs weren't a problem during the day, but as soon as the sun went down, the mosquitoes came out, and those buggers were hungry. All the DEET we had didn't work all that well, Evan says. We learned to just go to bed at sunset because the mosquitoes didn't come out until a few minutes after it got dark. It worked out great anyway, because the boys were always well rested for the next day of paddling and, of course, fishing. And here in the another picture of boys in the canoe fishing with the caption, "Left to right, Evan Groves practices a portage before leaving base camp. Evan, John Falcone, and David Dunn, left to right, finished their day with a paddle across Husband Lake. Troy Bergwell fishes until the sun goes down on the Marmion Lake." Fishing by canoe. Northern Tier's website features a digital document that contains some great tips for fishing from a canoe. Hint, it's different from fishing from a motorboat, among the pointers. Among the pointers, carry 50 feet of nylon line that can be lashed to a rock for an anchor. Use single hook lures. They're safe. They can handle all of the fish in the Northern Tier area, and they can be carried in a small pouch if you don't want to lug a tackle box throughout the area. Then look for northern pike in shallow water near weeds or some streams enter lakes, or where streams enter lakes. In the summer, look for bass in shallow areas with weeds on gravel bars and in rocky areas. Carry a small net with a short handle so it can be easily stowed. Net the fish head first outside the canoe, then lift it into the vessel. For more tips on fishing from a canoe, click on boyslife.org/links/NTIER pamphlet. All right, our next article, Brick by Brick, pages 22 through 25. Legoland California's master model builder can do it all. Martians, bonsai trees, cityscapes, the entire solar system. Eagle Scout Gary McIntyre has created all of this and more as a logo master model builder at Legoland California, a theme park in Carlsbad, California. McIntyre is responsible for designing and building many of the models in the park. He also judges monthly Master Junior Model Builder contests, leads tours for important visitors, and maintains all the park's Lego models. McIntyre's job also involves decking out the Miniland USA section of the park for every holiday. This has included a UFO crash site for Halloween and a Christmas tree outside the Lego White House. The Road to Legoland. Growing up, McIntyre's room was Lego construction central for the whole neighborhood. "Usually all the kids were playing at my house," McIntyre says. "I had a bunch of tables set up in my room. We built castles, spaceships, even a city with massive mansions and a city hall." As an adult, McIntyre has worked as a cabinet maker, construction manager, and wilderness therapy instructor. He also continued as a Lego hobbyist, working at an independent Lego model building shop. In 2006, he tried out for Legoland's nationwide master model builder search. McIntyre built a life-size Lego parrot standing on a pirate bomb and made it into the finals. He had fun building an egg, a human head, and something he had wanted to see at Legoland, a mini-land-scale version of a playground made with giant Lego bricks. McIntyre didn't win the contest, but 6 months later, Legoland California offered him a job. His first project was helping construct Miniland Las Vegas, the largest Miniland expansion in Legoland history. And here we see a picture right in the middle of, Legoland has a picture of the model of the Capitol in Washington, D.C., and Mr. McIntyre right in the middle of it. Lego Ambassador. In addition to his work within the park, McIntyre also represents Legoland in the media. When the Discovery TV show Mythbusters wanted to find out if the YouTube video of a giant Lego ball rolling down the street was possible, they gave Legoland a call. With McIntyre's help, the team built a ball that was 7 feet tall. It was so heavy, the Mythbusters forklift couldn't lift it. "I worked around the clock for 2 weeks straight on the Mythbusters Lego ball project," McIntyre says, "knowing all the time that I was creating this thing in order to destroy it." The Lego ball fell apart as it rolled down a hill. Brick by brick. As McIntyre prepares to build a model, he researches photos of the object on the internet. For many land scenes, he takes inspiration from real life, observing how people interact. He also draws inspiration from the Where's Waldo book series. Current events also influence McIntyre's creations. While driving to work one day, McIntyre heard a discussion on the radio about facilities being provided for the thousands of people attending President Obama's inauguration. As a result, Obama's inauguration scene at Miniland, including portable toilets with a long line of people waiting to use them. McIntyre says that scouting helped him get where he is today. His Eagle Scout project, building a trail at his old school, taught him how to be a project leader, use resources, and coordinate and motivate people. My favorite part of my job is sharing my passion with other people, McIntyre says. I get to do something I'm passionate about every day. What I do inspires kids to explore their creativity, helping them grow and learn. Creativity is important for us as individuals and as a society. We all need a creative outlet. And here in the picture, it has some job facts. Job facts, Lego model builder. Job outlook. Lego master model builder isn't an elite profession, but there are a growing number of opportunities. McIntyre is one of only two master model builders at Legoland, California. There are more than two dozen working on projects for Legoland parks and discovery centers worldwide, as well as at Legoland, Malaysia and Legoland, Florida, which are now under construction. Lego also hires builders for the large models in its stores. Independent Lego artists and builders work on commissions from businesses and individuals providing customized models and works of art. Education and experience. Lego model builders come from many backgrounds. They are architects, sculptors, carpenters, and even actors. The main requirements are a love for Lego, creativity, and the ability to build quickly. Successful builders need to find ways for their models to stand out in the crowd of competitors. Salary. Pay for a Legoland model builder starts at $10 to $12 an hour, and experienced builders make more. Independent Lego artist Nathan Sawaya earns from $10,000 to more than $100,000 per sculpture. For more information, boyslife.org/links/Legoland. And here shows a picture of some of Mr. McIntyre's work. At the far left, putting the finishing touches on President Obama's inauguration scene in Miniland, Washington, D.C. left, getting the Capitol ready for the 2009 holiday season, and above, working on the Vietnam Memorial in Miniland, Washington, D.C. And then it has Mr. McIntyre right in the middle of his work, the giant Lego ball created for the Mythbusters episode below, below with the Mythbusters team inside Legoland's model shop. Fun Lego facts. There are about 372 billion Lego bricks in the world. That's about 62 for every Earthling. Kids around the world spend 5 billion hours a year playing with Lego bricks. Legoland, California has more than 15,000 Lego models. The biggest model in the park, a dinosaur named Bronte, was built using more than 2 million Lego bricks. Legoland's smallest models, like the pigeon on a building in Miniland, Washington, D.C., are made out of only 4 bricks. The tallest Miniland building is the Freedom Tower at 28 feet. The real Freedom Tower is under construction in New York City at the site of the World Trade Center. In the Toolbox, pages 26 through 29. Every guy needs certain tools in his toolbox. He also needs to know how to use them. Right. Wrenches. Pliers are for gripping, but wrenches are for tightening. Pliers will damage nuts or bolts, so use a wrench instead. It has a picture of a variety of wrenches here. Hammer. To start a nail, hold the hammer midway up the handle and make close, light taps. You can use pliers instead of your fingers to hold the nail. When the nail is set well into the wood, take away your hand, hold the hammer near the end of its handle, and strike the nail. Here's a tip. If a hammer feels too heavy, don't choke up on its handle. Use a lighter hammer instead. Another tip. Stick a thin block of wood under the hammer to help pull out nails. Fun fact. How many hits does it take to drive a nail? Beginners need 16 to 30. Experts use 6 to 8. Saws. Different saws are made to cut almost any kind of material. Hand saws cut wood. Hacksaws are used on metal or plastic. Coping saws can cut curves. Pliers. Pliers come in many shapes and sizes. Use one designed for the job. Standard pliers hold on to things. Long nose or needle nose pliers handle small stuff and get at places fingers can't reach. A level. Use a level to make sure your board or other surface is straight, either horizontally or vertically. When the bubble's in the center, it's straight. Here's a tip. A longer level is more accurate than a shorter level. Let your first finger along the side of the handle to keep it steady. Now, this is in use of a saw. To saw, first pull slightly towards you to cut a little slot. Then use a light, long stroke. Once you're going, try extra pressure and power. Don't force it or you'll bend the saw blade. Use your whole body. Here's a tip. To cut straight, keep your eyes over the saw so you can see both sides of the blade. Tri-square. With a tri-square, test that corners are square. Here's a tip. Use a longer T-square to mark a line for cutting a wide board straight across. Tape measure. Buy one with a belt hook so it's always handy. Mark your measurements with a sharp pencil. Files. Use sandpaper. Files come in different grades, from coarse to fine. Hold the point in one hand and the handle in the other. Use slow, even, steady strokes. Whatever it is that you're filing, hold it firmly. Here's a tip. File in the cutting direction and then lift it up before taking the next stroke. Dragging it back dulls the file. Here's a tip. Use a rasp for rough work when lots of wood is to be removed. Screwdrivers. Multi-bit screwdrivers have the right sizes and shapes for whatever you're doing. Hold the screwdriver straight, not at a slant. Pocket knife. Pocket knives are for cutting, carving, and whittling soft materials such as wood. Don't use them on metal. Always cut away from your body in case you slip. Get one with a locking blade so there's no chance it will suddenly fold up and catch a finger. Don't use for prying or poking holes. Rules for tools. Use the right tool for the right job. For example, don't use a pocket knife to open a paint can. If the tool looks like it's bending or otherwise being harmed, then it's probably the wrong tool. Concentrate. Don't let anybody distract you from your work. When someone is near you, be extra careful. Use goggles. Your eyes will thank you. Use ear protection when using loud power tools. Your ears will thank you. Keep fingers out of the way. Use gloves as needed. Power tools. Standard homeowner power tools, not pro models, do the job best until you're a pro. Get a knowledgeable adult to check you out on each power tool before you try it yourself. Higher-end woodworking and metal tools such as drill presses, circular saws, band saws, table saws, and belt sanders should be left for adult use only. Palm sander. Save yourself a lot of trouble. Buy a sander for less than $50. Dust bags save on cleanup. Here's a tip. Don't press down too hard. Let the sander do most of the work. And finally, battery-powered drill set. For about $50, you get nearly everything you need for almost any job. Here's one tip. Keep extra batteries charged up. And the next tip, drill straight, not at an angle. And of course, there were pictures of all of these different tools. Two sport stars. It has a picture here on page 30 of a young man firing some sort of rifle. His name is Alex Polos, takes aim during the shooting portion of the biathlon. The penalty for each miss, 15 jumping jacks. Ooh. And then here's a picture of Stefan Wadman, hustles his way through one of three laps around the cross-country course. Connor Williams knows about cross-country skiing. He has been doing it for 7 years. It's just a great outing, he says, and it's good exercise. Connor, a 12-year-old second-class scout from Troop 4 in Ogden, Utah, knows about shooting, too. He's an avid hunter, and he works on improving his shot whenever he can. Putting the two together, however, takes some getting used to, as Connor found out when he and the rest of the Troop 4 participated in the Olympic biathlon experience last March at Soldier Hollow Cross Country Ski Resort, the site of the 2002 Winter Olympic biathlon. The slightest movement can mess up the best shot, so it's extra difficult to shoot straight when you're huffing and puffing from a session of cross-country skiing. It's a lot harder because your breathing is off, Connor says. You have just to breathe deep and slow your heart rate down as best you can. Fortunately, one of America's best biathletes showed up to give the scout some tips on doing it right. Getting good advice. Jeremy Tila finished in ninth place in the 10-kilometer sprint biathlon event at the 2010 Winter Olympic Games in Vancouver, Canada. He didn't earn a medal, but it was the highest finish of any U.S. athlete in that event. Tila trains regularly at Soldier Hollow, cross-country skiing in winter, and roller skiing on paved trails in the summer. He has mastered the art of hurrying up on skis, then quickly transitioning to being perfectly still while shooting. If you're in really good shape, your heart rate drops really fast, Tila told the scouts. You have to have good control. The scouts split into teams of four and competed in a relay-style competition. First, they skied around an oval course that took them about 100 yards up and down some small hills. Then they ditched the skis and took aim with the 177 caliber air rifles. Each scout got one shot at each of five targets about 15 feet away. For every miss, he had to do 15 jumping jacks before his teammate would begin his own session on the cross-country course. Then back to shooting until each teammate was done. Next came the individual event. Each scout did three laps of skiing, each of which was followed by five shots at five targets for a total of 15. And here he has picture on page 32 of the different events. Left to right, the scouts gather around Olympic biathlete Jeremy Tila for some advice on competing in their own event. The rifles and ammo are ready for loading. Scouts carefully load their guns, one pellet at a time. Connor Williams lines up the target using a scope similar to those used in the Olympics. The Olympic biathlon. Troop 4's biathlon experience consisted of a relay race featuring one lap of cross-country skiing, then one round of shooting and an individual event with three rounds of skiing and shooting. A real Olympic biathlon is a little more complicated. The 2010 Vancouver event included a 7.5-kilometer relay with four athletes, 10-kilometer individual sprint, a 12.5-kilometer pursuit. Competitors start at a different time depending on how they finish their last race. Then they have to pursue the leaders. A 15-kilometer mass start race, all competitors start at the same time, and a 20-kilometer individual race. Go fast, then go slow. Cross-country skiing, also called Nordic skiing, is physically and mentally demanding. But if you're in decent physical condition, using the right technique is more important than just being strong. Most cross-country skiers use what's called a diagonal stride. When one leg moves forward, the arm on the opposite side of the body moves forward too. An experienced skier will glide for as long as possible to conserve energy. It's a lot different from downhill skiing, but I think it's more fun, says 14-year-old star scout Stefan Wadman. You have to keep your concentration so you don't fall down. Olympic biathletes ski with their rifles on their back, then transition to a shooting position while still on the skis. The scouts left the rifles on the ground, then ditched their skis when they lined up in front of the targets. You've got a lot of adrenaline when you get to do the shooting, Stefan says. You have to stay calm, slowly breathe in and out, and then just go. Shooting straight. Even though you're in a hurry, the fundamentals that apply to shooting sports in general also apply to the shooting portion of the biathlon. The scouts tried to assume a relatively comfortable position, lying prone on padding that provided some insulation from the snow. They used their bones, not their muscles, to support the rifle. Then they held their breath, focusing slowly on what they were seeing through their sights. It can be difficult to ignore the rival next to you. You just try to slow down and get a really good shot, says 16-year-old Eagle Scout Ethan Oja, who hit 14 of 15 targets. When you're about to shoot, you stop breathing and the rifle pretty much stops moving. The best way to get better at the biathlon is to practice cross-country skiing, then practice shooting, then practice cross-country skiing and shooting. Really fast, then really slow. This was my second time to do this, and it was definitely easier this time, Ethan says. The key is not to try to get too fast and just practice and practice until you get better. And here he has a picture of both the boys and a few other scouts. Left to right, Alex Polis takes his best shot while his teammates wait for their turn. Lee Brady takes the lead during the ski portion of this event. The scouts from Troop 4 watch as the first skiers begin their trek around the cross-country loop. Now let's go to Scouts in Action. Page 42. A true story of Scouts in Action. He saved his mom from a heart attack. Chad Deviney, 17, and his sister awoke one morning to hear their father calling for help. They ran to the living room of their Choctaw, Oklahoma home and saw their mother lying on the floor motionless and unable to respond. She had suffered a heart attack. Mrs. Deviney wasn't breathing. Chad remained calm, checked his mother's pulse, and began CPR as his father called 911. Mrs. Deviney soon began breathing on her own and regained consciousness. Mrs. Deviney got up and tried moving around the house, but she was dizzy and disoriented. Chad restrained his mom to keep her from hurting herself until help arrived. Paramedics took Mrs. Deviney to a hospital. The doctors praised Chad for his quick actions. Mrs. Deviney came home the next day. Life Scout Chad Deviney, a member of Troop 275, chartered to Harmony Christian Church, Choctaw, Oklahoma, received a heroism award for his actions. And, of course, the pictures here show that Mr. Deviney, looking at his wife and calling for help, and it seems like his sister is just astonished by what happened. Then it shows Chad giving her, administering CPR. Then it shows her awakening just a bit, and then standing up, moving around, and Chad holding her. And then, of course, the paramedics came to take her away. And here's a picture of Chad receiving his heroism award for his actions. Let's do a few think and grin. Page 54. Start with joke of the month. Joke of the month. Here's a top-rated joke from boyslife.org. Don't like it? Submit your own at the jokes tab and don't forget to vote. A lady in a pet store spotted a colorful bird. She turned to an employee and asked how much it cost. $10, he replied. Can you send me the bill? She asked. I'm sorry, the employer said. You have to take the whole bird. Submitted by Patrick M., Fort Mills, South Carolina. Well, we've run out of time for today's reading. I am John Ivey, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience and readily available as podcast after the broadcast. We hope you've enjoyed today's reading. So long, until next time.